most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa and Jonathan Todd, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, good evening. You are listening to
Accent On with Ilona Europa and Jonathan Todd.
And the song you just heard, Blues Attack, was produced by our guest today, one of America's venerable names, Lynn Peterson. And to catch him, we had to go all the way over to Maui, Hawaii.
And you know what? Normally, I'm in a radio in a studio in Los Angeles, but this time it's not only about Maui. I just really needed to fly here and to talk to Lynn face to face. I love this guy. He's like just one of the most talented producers that I ever met. And I cannot wait for him to just bring us closer to years of producing amazing artists. And trust me, people, this will be not only one Accent On. I think we'll create like a lot of interviews with Lynn because we really want to know how all these great CDs came to the life. And yeah, and to add to it, we are in Maui. Where we are, Jonathan?
We're sitting on the deck of the soon-to-be-opened Fleetwoods on Front Street at 744 Front Street in Lahaina, right on the water. We're looking out at, brace yourself, everybody, 86 degrees. The water's about 75. There's nothing as far as the eye can see but boats bobbing up and down in Lahaina's harbor, Maialea Harbor. And across from us, we see a gigantic island that is Lanai. Behind us to the left, we see Molokai. You can barely see Molokini sitting up there. And every 5 minutes or so, a whale just breaches about 100 feet away. You see the whole darn thing. Steam comes up, which is their blowhole. And it's just an amazing, amazing place.
Well, Jonathan wants to say we invite everybody, first and foremost, to Maui, and secondarily to...
You guys pay your own airfare, okay.
But we still are inviting everybody. But I think the restaurant is just one of the coolest places ever on the Front Street. And if from time to time we'll be hearing some unusual sounds, explain, Jonathan, why we...
They're constructing right now as we speak. And we'll put some pictures up in the next few days. So when you download this from iTunes, be sure you go over to facebook.com/accentOn. And you can see all the pictures of the soon-to-be-open Fleetwoods on Front Street. Lynn Peterson has been with Nick Fleetwood for many, many years, more than a decade now. And he is a sound engineer. He actually did the engineering and the mastering and the producing with Mick. And with me on Blue Again, which was nominated in 2010 for a Grammy. And we did not win that Grammy, but being nominated in that pool of talent for Best Traditional Blues Album 2010 was the first time Mr. Fleetwood had been nominated outside of Fleetwood Mac in his 45-year career. Quite an accomplishment in a blues record to wind up getting the Best Blues Traditional Blues record, because the requirements for quality and production are beyond belief, and it's one of the categories that has the best, most organic production possible. And Lynn Peterson took 2 years and killed us all with detail and beauty and a couple of long fights, huh, Mick?
And this will bring us back to the first song, after
Blues Attack, 1985. Some of you weren't
Lynn,
even born.
Yes, we have here Lynn Peterson with us on Accent On. And please, Lynn, why did you choose this song for Accent On? Why Blues Attack?
Well, you know, when you called me, I wasn't at the studio, so my sources were limited. So it was what's in my iTunes. And Bruce McCabe wrote that song. And some of you might have heard of him. He wrote several of the Johnny Lang earlier tunes, Lie to Me and Still Raining. You probably heard that on American Idol with Phil Phillips, who won that show just a bit ago. And Bruce has been a dear friend for many years. He was also an Iowa boy. And those guys came, had been in Nashville, actually, and worked on that record with Bob Beester, a bunch of guys down there. And I hadn't seen them for quite some time. They came back to Minneapolis, and we hooked up in a coffee shop, and Bruce and Charlie had two more songs they wanted to add to that record, which I had heard that they had done, and I had made some of their early albums. And so they came in, and we did these two songs, Blues Attack and World Ain't Round, and which is a great tune. And we Yeah, we did the song. We spent quite a bit of time on them in the studio at Creation Audio in Minneapolis. And did the stuff, worked on it quite some time. You know, all my good friends on that record, so it makes it a lot of extra fun. We got the tunes done and got the stuff mixed. And, of course, I've not heard the stuff from Nashville yet, so, you know, I'm wondering if it's going to fly. That stuff's a pretty cat's on there. And I, you know, leave the control room while Bruce is listening to those tunes. I never like really being there. And I sneak down the hallway, and I was standing in the piano room getting some stuff. I see him out listening to songs. Of course, he doesn't know. He just sits there and listens, and eventually I have to go back in that control room, and we got done listening to those songs, and he says it's not going to fly with the Nashville stuff that we did. And of course, I'm sad. You know, it's my good friend. I'm like, what can we do? Like, how can we save this? He's writing a phone number on his paper and send for those tapes. Get that up here. We're going to re-record a bunch of that. So we did. We did that. Spent a lot of time in finishing up that record. It came out quite well. Great cats. Bruce has gone on. He played piano in a band called Lamont Cranston for many years. I think those guys did 20-some records in Minneapolis. They were signed to several labels. And some of the songs that Bruce wrote during his earlier years are ones that went on and became other people's hits in the later years, like the songs for Johnny Lang. So anytime I can work on any Bruce's stuff, it's always a great treat. And actually, I'll be heading back to have Bruce plan some stuff on a record I'm getting ready to start with The Cowboy that is over on Lanai. He's actually from Washington. He's working in the stables over there. His name's Jesse Taylor. And so I need that honky-tonk piano thing going on. So we're going to fly Jesse back to Minneapolis and get those piano overdubs back there, probably some steel guitar. So always good to see those guys. I'm looking forward to it. My brother's been a long time.
Lynn Peterson, what is an engineer and what is a producer? What are these funky words we hear all the time?
Well, you know, the engineer part is, I mean, it's varied. It's, you know, somewhat of a mechanic, I suppose, you know, to the artist. And it varies by what the artist needs and what they want you to do. So that can be quite varied. The producer portion of it, that can be anything from, you know, get copy to, you know, write checks to write the songs and play the parts. So it's quite varied. Sometimes you're just kind of keeping the ball rolling and keeping everything as organized. It can really be many different things. Often things, if I'm involved in it from a production point of view, you're probably steering the song around and, you know, helping them cultivate their tune and, you know, bring in some big players that, you know, you think are going to lift those artists up. So it's different things.
Cool. So
we had another question. You know, you are calling yourself producer, but I know you're also an engineer in a studio, and you work around music in so many ways, yes? Can you tell us a little bit more, how did you start your life in music business, okay?
Well, actually, you know, and I probably am more of an engineer more often than a producer. You don't get it often to produce people's stuff too often. You probably end up doing it by default. My recording career was sort of accidental. I was a singer and a drummer for many, many years in the, you know, the 70s, 60s into the 70s and then into the 80s. And after a little stint with, you would never even know, the band called Spanky and Her Gang, that she had a lot of hits in the 60s and came out again in the 70s. And my kids were all getting kind of big. I couldn't be gone any longer. And so I was just taking a break, really is all I was doing. And I had written some songs and recorded those in a little home recorder that I had. And I was at a place making some cassette dubs. You guys remember what those are, cassettes, little tape thing. And the cat that was making the tapes, he could only make 8 at a time. And as those would pass by, he was digging the tunes, and he kept saying I should, you know, go in and record those over. By the time I got to the third or fourth pass, he was giving me a key to their studio, which was in the next door. And we go over there, and it's a great little spot. And it's in a house. And they had just finished cutting all the tracks for the Janet Jackson Control album, and they were all on vacation now. So Jam and Lewis were the clients at the time, and Steve Wies, very good friend of mine, was the engineer, and that was the early days of Creation Audio, and they, you know, Funky Town, all those songs with them in that place. So, you know, they were gone for a bit. I used the studio, did these tunes of mine, and then, of course, they all came back and went back to work on that record. And that was a big hike up the ladder for all of those involved in that record, which I was not. But everybody else kind of went up, and they built new studios. Digital recording was just becoming a new thing. Multi-track tape machines were just being invented.
Wait. How did it used to go before multi-track ADAT tapes?
Well, actually, long before ADAT tapes, you know, when it was just, you know, analog machines, 2-inch analog machines mostly.
2-inch tape.
Yeah.
2-inch wide tape on a gigantic reel.
Yeah, would you mention
looks like a kitchen stove.
Yeah. In a blues attack, you mentioned that you were cutting the tape, yes, for the saxophone. But really, you need to tell us, because you had long, probably a few minutes of great solo. And how did you operate? How did you put together this amazing solo for saxophone?
Well, that stuff was recorded digitally, so that was all comp. You know, you'd go through and, you know, pick and choose the very best of stuff. And, you know, there are so many performances. Very often, you know, when you're comping tracks up of somebody's performance, whether it's a vocal or a solo instrument, you know, you might be doing that normally to fix something. These guys were so ridiculous that every take was so over the top, you had a hard time thinking of which one to use. So it was really taking, you know, very best performances from, you know, different days and stuff to make that. But that was all a digital recording. Before that, it was an analog tape. And then you would cut that, you know, with a razor blade and splice that together, which was in the earlier years. But the Hoopsnakes record wasn't. But the first step was, and we were beta testers for, you know, digital recording when that first came to be. And with Sony and 3M had those machines, which was an adventure in itself, you know, beyond actual, you know, running recording studios, was the adventure of digital recording. A lot of failures, and, you know, machines literally starting on fire. And of course, the support was people getting on planes and flying to your studio, because it has to be fixed right now. And so it was kind of a heyday. So we're doing, you know, Paul Abdul records and Steve Miller Band records in our studios, the 3 studios, and Steve was, you know, kind of a rock star engineer in those days. Totally was. And so a lot of stuff going on. Big heyday, and actually, you mentioned the ADATs. We eventually became, you know, beta testers for those as well, which came over a tape getting eaten. We became beta testers, and we were for, you know, many of those digital companies. So it was quite a thing. The very first DAT players, if any of you guys know what DATs are, or the little small
digital audio tape.
Yeah, and they were about the size of a driver's license, and that was the 2-track that you mixed onto. And you know, I can remember the day Sony brought the very first one. We didn't even know what it was. Brought it over to the studio, and it was a 2-piece unit at the time. And you know, put that tape in there, and they're showing us back and forth input to tape, and we're hearing this, that it sounds great. And of course, they're giving it to us, but you know, we wonder, what are we doing with this, because nobody else has one. And but of course, you know, that's going to be the new thing, which it was. And we also had a lot of ad agency stuff we did in one of our studios. We get 100 Clios a year or so.
Wow.
So now all of these, you know, radio spots that would have been on, you know, quarter-inch tape and piles of little 7-inch reels by the door every day turned into a DAT machine, DAT players.
First time I ever started recording alone in America, we had 16 tracks of ADAT.
Nice.
And we'd run a fader to track 1 and a fader to track 2.
Yeah.
And then you down on 2 through 17. 18 was a bump track, and take 1, then fader down on 1, up on 2, engage ADAT number 2 track,
yeah.
Number 2 take. And that went out. Then when we had to wind back to go find it, we'd be marked a number.
Uh-huh.
And it was just like the old tapes with the counters on them. When you had to go back after an hour-long session and go find a place, you had 16 tape machines all go wee all at once, and that was the beginning of the microwave oven. And we all went to see if we could make the coffee before we round to where we needed to go get a punch in.
Yeah, those machines weren't very friendly if you didn't use an autolocator. You had to, if you used locate points and hit to a specific point, they'd park there, and then they'd sync up pretty fast. But for guys that just used fast forward rewind button, that was kind of a suicide mission.
Okay, and now we hear this. So much technological conversation we are here on Accent On. But really, to have Jonathan and Lynn talking together, we can spend hours talking about these things. But I am here to bring us back to the music of not of today, but 80s, 90s, and 2000. I know you had a chance to record one of the biggest stars in America, and probably you had some highlight of your career, although everything is in front of us, we know, but I know that one of the decades, they were like the best decades of your life. And I will...
Lynn's recorded Willie Nelson to Alanis Morissette.
Yeah, Lynn to talk
you
to
name
him.
It.
Yeah, please, Lynn.
Well, actually, the Willie Nelson stuff, that's usually some parts in tunes. I've never gotten to do a record with Willie, but he lives here on the island, so, and he participates in a lot of people's material. So, and he's just a great cat and very humble, very nice guy to work with. And so he's been in actually three times. He did duets. And he did a duet with Alanis Morissette, which of course all those tracks were recorded in LA and sent over. So, we don't even meet them. Willie comes in and does the part, and we put it together and send it back, and a lot of stuff gets done that way.
Who else has been at Maui Recording?
I do a lot of stuff in there with Mick, which brings a lot of other things in. I bring some people over a lot from Minneapolis. I bring over Ricky Peterson a lot, and he's an incredible producer, singer, songwriter, but he's a keyboard player and arranger, and he's out, often with Stevie Nicks. Plays B3 for her, and Bonnie Raitt. He's actually right now in Brazil, I think, posting Facebook pictures with the David Sanborn band. So he comes here whenever he can, and I'll infiltrate him into some local stuff. Have a great jazz record with a guy, John Maritano, that we brought all those cats in. Emil Richards is also on that. He came here to work on this record from previously doing a record of duets, I think, with Paul McCartney. So, who doesn't want to go to Maui and work on some music? So, it's not a bad thing. It's pretty fun. It's a pretty good thing.
Cool.
Lynn, okay, I know, and everybody knows now that you work with so many, many artists, and it seems like you like rock and blues the most. Is this true? Do you like maybe different genres? And what are you doing right now? But first and foremost, blues and rock, this is what really your heart is into?
Well, I suppose my heart was into it. That's kind of where I grew up. I mean, Minnesota was a kind of a funk R&B scene. All of that went down there. And but it was also a lot of folk music. So, we'd do, Leo Kottke and Larry Long and Claudia Schmidt, Michael Johnson and all that kind of stuff, a lot of those kinds of records. It was also a lot of big bands there, which we were lucky to do because we had a studio large enough to, facilitate, 60, 70 people playing. And there was also a lot of jazz, which, I'm not really a jazz guy. I get busted in a heartbeat when people start talking about it because I don't really know the guys and the history and stuff. But I'm surrounded by it, especially here. There are so many great jazz players here, as this record with John that I mentioned. And so, I'm like the newbie on the jazz thing. I'm lucky that I get to participate and work on those records.
Okay, do you have a favorite vocalist, and do you prefer to record men or ladies? Which voices do you think are harder to record? And I don't know what to say, but maybe you have your favorite in studio.
It's not so much of a male or female. It's easier to record people that have done it a bunch, obviously, because they have a good control and have all that technique down. So, you're getting something very nice. About 10 years, 12, 13, geez, 12 years ago now. Shamefully, the time has gone by. did some work on a Doobie Brothers record, did Pat Simmons vocals, which, you know, and there's a guy that's, you know, recorded out on Cannon Cowan-Tommy records, but such a fine singer. And, I mean, you know, you get those guys on that level and that much experience and expertise. It's just, you know, you're recording them and you almost don't want to be charged. You just want to sit there and have them just give you a concert. You know, it's just like
that knocking you're hearing, the sawing, the hammering, is all the finishing touches being put on in the last month of preparation for Fleetwood's on Front Street, Mick Fleetwood's new restaurant opening in early August right here in Lahaina Town, Maui. And we are live at the top of the restaurant. It's actually four levels. The top level is 4,000 square feet of sun-drenched grandeur. Inside the second level down, second level up as well, is the dining room. There's four bars between those two places. Then on the ground floor, you've got Fleetwood's, the store, and that is a retail shop and wine cellar, art gallery, jewelry, logo shop, and then beneath the building is a 6,000 square foot basement, all of which has food coming in from one of the best chefs on the planet. You've seen him for the past 11 seasons. We're in the 10th season now. They're shooting 11 almost as we speak, and that would be the sous chef to Gordon Ramsay, Mr. Scott Liebfried. And Scott is sitting right here with us, right next to Ilona Europa, with his own inimitable accent from the East Coast, Long Island. And we'll move from the Iowa accent and the middle of the country over to the East Coast for just a second. These two guys are not randomly sitting next to each other. Scott is the corporate chef for Fleetwood's on Front Street. And, of course, we have Lynn Peterson, who is the sound engineer for the entire project. So, Scotty, welcome to Accent On.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Okay, I'm very hungry, first and foremost. And I want to know what type of food we'll be having in this restaurant, which partially I think your influence is very important, because if people do not like food, that would be trouble, but I know they will love it. And tell us what type of food.
She's always hungry, Scott.
Yeah, well, for a second there, I thought maybe I was sitting in a special seat for a moment, but I guess not. We are doing what I consider to be a very Americanized style of food, but there's a lot of influences from the islands because we're surrounded by the ocean. So a lot of seafood, a lot of small artisanal producers that live here in Maui that are making great goat cheese and growing great strawberries and basically getting any kind of resource that we can from everything that's really around us. To that, we have a couple of really unique things that scream to Mick Fleetwood's heritage as a classic Englishman, from the best beef Wellington on the island to a reinterpretation of a artisanal flatbread that's kind of thought after the classic pub dish of bangers and mashed potatoes. So we have a little bit of everything, and then we're just having some fun too with you know, build your own sundaes and classic chocolate chip cookies for dessert, and
Fleetwood mac and cheese.
The Fleetwood mac and cheese has been a discussion for many, many months now, and it finally has made its way to a certain place on the menu, to designing storybooks that are here for the kids when they're dining in the restaurant to color, to tell a story, something for them to have a takeaway from their vacation, not only to Hawaii and to Maui, but to Fleetwood's as well.
Scott, you want to talk about the Harley Fat Boy Burger?
I would love to. I was actually working on this earlier today, and we have decided to do a cross promotion with Harley Davidson out here on the island.
Harley Davidson, for those of you who need to go there on Maui, they're located at number 13, go figure, Prison Street. Maui, Hawaii. Number 13, Prison Street. Harley Davidson.
Couldn't make it up. It's actually true. There's no joke about that. Scary, but true.
So tell me about the burger.
The burger is going to consist of at least 1 pound of our secret burger blend that has been designed for us. It's a certain percentage of ground chuck, a certain percentage of brisket. There's a little bit of short rib in there, and there's some ribeye in there as well, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a steak. It's a steak on a bun. Exactly what it is.
And it's a pound burger, the Harley Fat Boy.
And to that, we add we have not only prosciutto ham that will go on there, but we also have really unique applewood smoked bacon that will be cut real in.
So good.
Yeah. Of course, a little Maui onion, and I spoke to the baker this morning. I'll see you tomorrow morning.
Well,
as soon as I have it, I'll take a photograph.
The 1 pound bun.
I'm sure it's a thing.
And we're going to heat a brand up with that, and we're going to sear the buns with Nick's logo, yeah?
We're not done with the burger.
And I understand the cost of the burger is indeed $13,472.87. We're
still working on the cost of the burger.
And what does it come with? What's the condiment?
The Harley Hog Burger comes with a side of Harley Davidson. So if you order the burger, you are essentially buying a motorcycle.
Wow.
And they'll ship it anywhere in the world to you.
Anywhere you want it to go, it'll ship right to your front door.
Oh, genius.
So why buy a Harley and get a burger when you can buy a burger and get a Harley?
Exactly. You can't go to a restaurant, sit down, and have a cocktail and order a Harley Davidson. But you can certainly do it the other way around.
Just out of curiosity, are we all sitting looking at the Pacific Ocean here and its blueness with the ships bobbing at anchor over here, and we're in cabana number one on the top of Fleetwood's on Front Street, the tallest place on the water in Maui. The breeze is to die for. This place is just absolutely gorgeous, folks.
Crystal clear day, and we're enjoying every moment of it. Unfortunately, we have to spend some time inside working.
What a drag. Wait,
before, I know.
Before we lose Scotty, what kind of music do you like?
Oh, I go back and forth between a lot of things, but I was born and raised on and still listen to classic rock and roll. Has always been my absolute go-to, from Black Sabbath to Led Zeppelin to Rolling Stones, of course, obviously Fleetwood Mac. My parents were pretty cool when I was growing up, so I was exposed to a lot of different styles of music. My dad was a classic rock guy. My mom was a disco queen eventually. So.
Oh, no.
Mommy.
Oh. Okay, now I need to steal the phone from you. I know you are busy and you need to go downstairs, but you mentioned disco. Jonathan, you forgot to tell that this place downstairs will be having club, which I think, you know, oh, that's the future. You don't want to talk about this right now. He says, no, not talking. Okay, I like this live radio. Okay, erase everybody what I was talking about. Anyway, thank you so much, Kat, for stopping by. And I'm just very hungry, and I'm so sorry we cannot eat tonight. But I think in a few weeks, the restaurant will be open, and that we'll be trying food. And first and foremost, we'll go back with our interview to Lynn, because I know Lynn will take care of about sound in this restaurant, and I'm sure some type of music will be your choice and what we'll be playing here also. Then I'm going back to talk to Lynn a little bit. Now I'm moving to another part of the chair. Okay, Lynn.
So thank you for being up here. You want to just tell us who wins this year's Hell's Kitchen, since you know?
Comes at the same price as the hamburger.
Got it. All right. Fox TV, what time does the Hell's Kitchen air, Scott?
Currently on Tuesdays at 9 o'clock.
Or 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock, somewhere in prime time. Fox TV. Scott is the bald sous chef. He opened up this season cutting everybody else's hair to match his own before Gordon Ramsay jumped in and stopped the debacle. It's good to have you with us. It's really good to have you at Fleetwood's on Front Street. Thanks so much, buddy.
Cool, man. See you soon.
Thank you. I love you. Thank you. Your phone.
All right, Lynn, we're back to you.
All right.
Yay.
Talking about music at the top of Fleetwood's on Front Street in Maui, Lahaina, Hawaii.
Okay. I know you have here a gorgeous studio, and I'm planning to produce a very cool CD, which will be devoted really to one of my charities that I'm involved to. And this will be a big, big project. But if you can tell us, how this happened? Did you move from me? You're from what town did you move? Because I know you were in Minneapolis. That's where you had your own studio. But then many, many years ago, you decided to just move into Maui, and you'll tell us how this happened. And I was happy to visit your studio, and it's just the most charming, pretty, not only amazing studio, you just feel peacefulness, you feel calmness. And, of course, you feel like in a home, in your own surrounding. And this just gives another atmosphere that I think studios in L.A. do not have it. You come here.
You've got a bowsprit.
Yeah.
Like the naked woman hanging on the front of an old whaling ship. And it's made out of wood, and it's just sitting there with all the beef and everything and aloha lays all around her that everybody's brought over the years. Then get better in terms of vibe.
Then what I'm saying, Lynn has his great studio. He will tell us a little bit more about, and if somebody wants to contact Lynn and record his their project in the studio, we would love. Yeah, it's Maui Recording, and please do so. But yeah, again, this studio saw and heard amazing instrumentalists, amazing vocalists. But I want to know, how did it happen? How did you build the studio? And what is the plan for the future? For you and your studio.
Well, that's a lot of stuff. My goodness. And that bowsprit, you know, when I was rebuilding that control room, I really wanted to hang it, you know, right above the big monitors in the studio, kind of hanging over the console. But, you know, my better half thought I might be taking that a little too far. So it's in the performance area, and here's our mascot. Keeps us looking towards the control room. How I got here... You know, I was in Minneapolis and, you know, partners in a studio there for many years, you know, but I also mixed some live shows and did some tours. And I came over here with a band and did a show in a circus tent on the beach up behind the Grand Wailea. It was my, you know, first time of coming here. I really hadn't even ever thought about coming here. I just did with that show. And, you know, I met somebody over here that I came back to visit several times in the next little period of time, and pretty soon I was here half the time, and my partner's thinking I'm out of my mind because I'm booking tickets to come back here before I've even gotten back there, and pretty soon I was kind of here, and, you know, I looked around, it was kind of, I was misplaced. I'm pretty sure I should have been born here and lived here all this time, but of course, if I would have, I wouldn't have learned some of the things that I did, so it's good I came later. And I met up with a guy named Sam Ahia, who I think you're going to hear a tune from a little later. He's a Hawaiian guy, incredible guitar player, singer, classical nylon string guy, but plays anything. And I hooked up with him, and he brought me over to Lahaina, actually. And then he took me down to this studio in town that used to belong to George Benson. George built it in the 70s, and it ran into the 80s, and tons of history there from, you know, Stevie Dan and you know, the Crosby, Stills, Nash guys, and Dan Fogelberg, all those kind of things of that age, that kind of country rockish kind of deal, folkish thing. Beautiful stuff. My favorite songs, actually. That's kind of probably my record collection. And, so I always wanted that place. I just walked in there. Somebody else had it. And a few years later, it became available. So I shared it with some other guys, and I would come and go still. I did a couple other nightclub restaurant endeavors that I did some designing on and building parts of, one in Minneapolis in a skyscraper and one down in Texas that went away in the hurricane off the beach in Galveston. And I found my way back here, and that studio was open again, and I took it, and I gutted the control room and rebuilt that to kind of a modern situation, and have been there ever since. It is a great room. It's quite comfortable. It's got, you know, the old school vibe in there, you know, a lot of wood.
Yeah, a lot of analog vibe.
Yeah, it's got that. Yeah, I mean, you know, we record on Pro Tools. It's not a lot of maintenance over here, so to have a big console is not probably going to fly. But, you know, there's 40 channels of, you know, Neves and APIs and telefunctions and all those groovy things, and a bunch of nice microphones. So it's pretty much the same if you were recording wherever. You're still
doing the
same process. Sit there.
And George used to sit in that room. And ironically, I met George in my Minneapolis studios long before I ever came to Hawaii. So I thought it was quite, you know, ironic that I would end up at his old place here. And Ricky Peterson, who I mentioned earlier, he was a tenant in our studios in Minneapolis, and you know, kept the studio there, and would bring people in that he would produce. And so he had produced, I think, 3 records with George. With his brother Paul Peterson. I think that was the only Grammy-nominated record, I think, that they had. I believe, I could be wrong on that, so don't quote me. But they did a lot of stuff together. And so there's a lot of, you know, great vibes, you know, in that place just from all these cats that have recorded in us throughout the years. And, you know, so we're trying to continue the process and keep on bringing them in.
Okay, Lynn, outside of you being a record producer and just a great engineer and just loving your place and bringing people, just amazing people with amazing talent and create this great stuff that we are talking about, I know you are also a songwriter. I know that you are playing drums. I know that you have something in you that you somehow, somewhere do not want to let it go out. And when I met you and we talk about this, and I'm like, no. We need to have some CD that is of yours, because I know, and we talk about it, you have it. Why you do not want to focus on your own music? Why you do not want to do this? Why are you so shy? Or what is this about? I don't get it. We need to have your creativity to be somehow, you know, put on a CD for everybody to enjoy. Why you do not want to do it?
Yeah, why don't you want to do it?
Why?
You know, why don't I want
to
do
it? It's what I listen to all the time. Why you don't want to do it?
You know, it is kind of funny when I think back, because you know, it's what I was in the beginning, and I did a few records. I did 3 records, but I never put out. And you know, in those days, you know, you couldn't. Now anybody can. You go get a laptop and you can go get GarageBand and, you know, make some racket on there and put your picture on there with a CD, and you're a star now in your own mind.
But you are.
In the old days, you know, you couldn't do that, so you had to, you know, do the real deal. And so it wasn't as easy. And but I wrote those songs and made those recordings. And then I ended up in the, you know, the recording business. And some of it was like, well, I can do this over now, and I can do it better. And I would do that over and over and over, and I just never put it out.
Okay. Can you give us a promise that next time when I will see you, and I hope this will be like 3 months maybe or 4 months from now, we will be talking on Accent On. Accent On will be the first radio show that will let people to listen to your one song. Maybe we'll, I don't know what this would be, but I think we all need to have some type of schedule in our life. And I did this with one or two of my past guests. We had Orlando Valente here, wonderful actor who is just now left to Italy, but his life is amazing in L.A. And we will be talking also with people what happened to our friend, Italian actor. But outside of it, you know, we need to just tell people that a few months from now, and you promise, maybe promise that you have one song that we can play on Accent On. Will you promise us that?
Yeah, I'll promise you. You know, and it was kind of funny because as you mentioned that last time you're here, I dug out some things that I hadn't heard for, you know, 20 some years, and one was a cassette that my son sent me that I'm listening to, and he wanted another copy of this, and I don't even know who he is.
Tell us what we're gonna hear from just a moment. They're gonna put on the Hawaiian song.
That's a very nice song by Sam Ahia, and Sam. Be over here. If you come in, Sam, I mean, he's great. And I took Sam to Minneapolis and did a record with him there with a bunch of, you know, rock star sidemen. And I can't say enough about that guy. And this was the first record I did with Sam. We actually shipped a rig over here and set it up in the living room and a side room of his house. And for 6 months, we, you know, salvaged this recording that he had started. And put that record out.
And what is the title of the song?
The song is called Hula Lady.
Hula Lady.
And the record is called Hawaiian Time.
And because we are not in a studio, I know that Ronan will
Thank
be
you, Ronan,
playing the song.
Today.
And if we will not say bye-bye to everybody who listened today to the song, please go to iTunes and download Accent On, or go to LA Talk Radio on Accent On page. You also can go and listen to the links. And we are saying bye-bye to Lynn Peterson. I promise we'll be hearing for a few months from now his song, and we'll be having him more often on our show. Thank you so much from Hawaii, from Maui. We love you.
Everybody, enjoy your week, and thanks to Lynn Peterson.
Listening to Accent On with Alona Europa and Jonathan Todd, right here on LA Talk Radio.